study. So we narrow down, and I think you are the among the, I think the last. Then we, from there, we'll then deliberate the options and identify where the real gaps are and what the real problem is and the way forward. At least we're able to bring SALGA, to bring the magistrates, the judges, traditional leaders, all those that are termed as office bearers in the act. And also it will lead us to take a decision whether we're going to amend or whatever route we're going to take. Just as a form of introduction, we will do that, and then you do that yourselves also. My name is Lindwe Maseko. I'm the co-chairperson for this article.
The word co-chairperson is from the co-chair.
Dr. Tembekwaya, member of this committee. Thank you.
Ali Kleani, member of this committee. Mankoma Morgan, member of the committee. Dr. Musesho, with the content advisor for the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Estelle Grunewald. I'm a stand-in committee secretary for this meeting.
Yes, I'd like you to also introduce yourself.
I'm Stephen Madley from Council for Medical Schemes.
I'm Paresh Prema from the Council for Medical Schemes.
And Alicia Skuman, also from the Council for Medical Schemes.
Thank you very much for the introduction. And also then, without much of short time, we will then give you the opportunity to present to us. Alicia did indicate that I don't know what happened to something to the flash disk, but they've got the presentation. So we'll go through the hard copies that we have. So we'll follow it from there. So there won't be anything that is on the screen. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to all the honourable members. On the first slide, we just indicated the brief that we will be dealing with, and just in short, it's the tariff of members of Parliament, the need and possible options with regard to Parliament or other competitive medical schemes, the necessity of introducing amending legislation, the impact that it will have on retired members, the co-application of the Parliament and the Medical Schemes Act.
I was going to ask, please indicate which.
It's the first slide.
Which one, which presentation?
It says
that the outside.
So we will only be dealing with this one. This is the combined presentation. It's a Parliament ad hoc committee meeting.
That document we can't find. That particular document, we know that we have different documents, but that particular one. Unless if it is this one, it's not this one. It's not that one. Thank you.
We'll start with the first one, is the contributions claims and performance of PowerMed. Just to say, the brief that we will be dealing with is mostly an update of our last meeting. So the
wait a minute, my dear. Let's show the members which one. The one that's reaching PowerMed Medical Scheme out of committee, this one. It's this one. The one that starts inside with contribution and claims permit 2017
yes.
Compared to
2017. Yeah, we'll start with that.
Yes. Yeah, that's outside is written permit medical scheme ad hoc committee. Yes, on the first page, it's written contribution and claims. Permit 2017 compared to 2016. You've got it, Dr. Tembabayo? We all okay now? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I'll be going through these few slides that you have in front of you. It's an update from the one we presented earlier this year, and focusing more just on the specific questions you raised in the brief. So these are the latest indicators from our annual report that we launched last week on the performance of PowerMed. So the first line is the gross contribution. So the contributions for the scheme for 2017 increased by 8.9% from 2016 to 2017. The membership of the scheme reduced by 0.5% from 2,400 members to 2,394 main members. Claims increased by 5.7% to 239.5 million rands in 2017. And your non-healthcare costs went up by 10% to 9.2 million. The solvency of the scheme is still healthy, or almost three times the minimum requirement of 25% at 72.3% at the end of 2017. On the next slide, I've given a historical information on the performance of PowerMed since 2014. We look at the average membership has remained stable over the period from 2014, from 2,385 members to 2,394 now in 2017. The contribution income per average member per month has remained stable from 3,300 in 2014 to 3,800 in 2017. The non-healthcare cost per member per month is 160 rand and 70 cents in 2017. I have another slide speaking to that later. 2017 was a good year for the scheme. It made a surplus of 5 million rand. The previous year it made a 16 million rand loss. So as medical schemes year in and year out, the results will be based on the financial or the claims that the scheme experiences. It's not always going to be the same, and as such you get years where there are higher claims, where you have losses, and years where you recover, where there are fewer claims, and then you make a surplus which goes back to the surplus of the scheme for use by its members in later years. So 2017 had a surplus year for the scheme, which brought the solvency up to 72.3%. From its low, from the 80%, it dropped in the previous year. It's now trying to recover that. The solvency in rand terms is 160 million rand. On the next slide, I have the PowerMed contributions. I assume in the brief when you speak to tariff, you were referring to the actual contributions paid by members. This slide would show how the contributions have moved from 2017 to the proposed increase for 2019. So the proposed increase for 2019, or the proposed contribution or tariff, is 6,396 for main member, 5,272 for an adult and 1,656 for a child. The increase is 9.7% from the 2018 contribution rate. I did mention in our last meeting that the 2018 rate wasn't approved by us because we had some queries regarding the non-healthcare expenditure. We felt it was quite high. So we are engaging the scheme with that and trying to see how they can reduce that. Being a small scheme, it's a challenge because you have a smaller base in which you can share those costs, and as such, it's not an easy way to say you can reduce it without as easily as a bigger scheme would be able to do. I think the next slide is contributions and age. It's a graph. It's in black and white, so I'll just explain what it's trying to say. So the bottom set of bar lines are the contributions for all the medical schemes options that are registered. And I have their line plan 007, which is the contribution rate for PAMED. What is important in our industry, the age of a scheme is will tell you whether the contribution would be higher or lower. So the older a scheme is, the higher the contribution rate would be. So we, on that, the line that is drawn through the graph, there's an indication of 49.9. That's the age of the scheme. You can see that on average, the average age of the scheme is higher than the rest of the industry, and as such, the contribution rate is higher because of the age of the members of the scheme. The slide is merely there to indicate the relationship between the contribution level of tariff and the age of the scheme, or of the average age of the scheme.
Can I just find out the bottom part where the more with lines?
Yes.
That's the industry.
That's the industry, all the contribution levels.
Okay. And then the top one is
so you can yes. So that you can see the lines after the plan 007 are some schemes that have some of the contribution rate for other scheme options. So PAMED is not the most expensive, and based on its age, it's actually at the point where it's comparable to other schemes in terms of other scheme options in terms of its age. The only issue is because you are a scheme with one option, you don't have other lines that would cross-subsidize in your contribution rate. So it's interesting to look at the graph to see how the two are related. On the next slide, I put in the non-health expenditure, and the reasons why I put that is for PAMED being a scheme of 2,400 members, the non-healthcare expenditure is 160 rands per member per month that is being paid to an administrator and for all the admin costs. I put then the restricted scheme level, because PAMED is a restricted scheme, look at what the industry average is for restricted schemes on a like-for-like basis. And you can see that PAMED is much higher than the restricted scheme average, almost 60% higher than the 95.70 per member per month. It's almost comparable to the open scheme average of 177 rands that we have there. So I think that is something that as a regulator is concerning, and we want to find ways to get the scheme to be more effective in managing the funds and reducing expenses which are not necessary. The next slide, I have put the demographic profile of the scheme, and I've compared it to other schemes which we've used to compare options with. I think one of the, and it's similar to the slides we presented previously, to show what are the comparing options that PAMED members would want to look at in deciding if they were to change medical schemes. So we've used, I think the most important one is GEMS. And then we have another scheme which has a lot of public sector members, which is an open scheme, Politas. And then we've used SABC as another closed, restricted. just medical scheme, and HOSMED that also has a lot of municipal members. We can see the sizes vary, but when we look at the average age for PharMed compared to the others, it's 49.5 versus 30, the range between 30 and 34 in average age. So that is, again, an indication of the size and the type of members of the on the scheme. Obviously, you would know as you are members of PharMed. And the average age also would then indicate the pensioner ratio. It is 30.6, which is much higher than the comparison schemes that we put up there. It's important to note that part of the advice we're going to give is we cannot prescribe which scheme would be the best or which option for members to choose, because that is financial advice. But we're merely giving you ideas of what is out there to compare against, so that when you go down that road, you are informed as to what your options are. In the next slide, I've given then a line-for-line comparison of benefit options that are very similar to the PharMed ones, and it shows where the differences are. I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's more for members' own information to say, if I look at my day-to-day benefits for medicines, how do they compare to an SABC, a CHEMS Emerald, HOSMED Value, and Bonita Standard? These are the plans which are closest to PharMed in terms of benefits and contributions as well. So it's more of a more for your personal information, so that you are aware of what are the differences between what you currently have and what the options are going forward. We're welcome to take any questions on that if you want clarity on how the benefits are structured, why are they different. So that follows on to the next page as well, as to what the benefits are. There is some terminology in there which if you need any have any questions on, I can clarify. So on the next slide, I've got benefit changes for 2018 to 2019. So I think it's important to give this information to members if you haven't already got it. For 2019, as I stated earlier, the increase is proposed is 9.7%. The limits will remain unchanged for 2019. What they've also included is wellness benefit enhancements for members. Another important thing that the scheme is implementing is a special referral process from 1 January. What that means is the scheme is going to require members of PharMed to nominate your family practitioner, and through that family practitioner you will be able to access the specialist benefits. What they do find in doing that is that the quality of the care that you get is better, because by using one practitioner, the person has all your historical information, will be able to advise you better on the correct treatment, and will not result in additional costs. Because what we find is going to a different provider would require that provider to do a range of tests again. And that's actually what leads to the increase in the claims and the cost of the scheme. So it's a method in which the scheme can try to manage the cost, but also giving members the best health care, because they get the best advice from your family practitioner. And as such, they would be... And using that benefit, you will then be able to access a specialist through the referral mechanism with a family practitioner. But what they have made an allowance for is for certain specialists that we have defined conditions or defined tests that you go for will not require that referral. The list is there. Pediatric consultations, maternity consultations, oncologists, ophthalmologists, and the investigations done by pathologists for your x-rays, blood tests, those sort of things would not require a referral, because those can be done directly by members. So it's trying to find a way in which you can manage the benefits better for members. This is the same process that the Emerald Value option on GEMS has adopted, and it's found that it has provided a better outcome for its members in terms of managing their health better. The next slide hasn't come through very clearly, but essentially what we try to say in that slide is, at the Council for Medical Schemes, it's our responsibility to approve increases before they are implemented. So medical schemes cannot just change any benefits or contributions without our prior approval. And what that slide says is, contribution increases are made up of a number of factors. The main factors are tariff increases. Tariff increases are what the doctors charge and the hospitals charge, and the increase thereon year on year. Utilization is the effect of you using benefits more than previously. So we find that as a person ages, we find that they use benefits more, and as such that leads to the increase in contribution. So even though we have doctors' rates increase by 5 or 6%, our contribution increase is still higher because it needs to take into account the actual profile, the actual members' needs. And that's why the contribution increase is based on not just the tariff increase. The reserving portion there in that block speaks to whether you are at the 25% solvency or below or above. In this case, because you have a healthy solvency of 72%, the element that requires you to build that solvency is reduced in your contribution increase. So you notice in this year, the increase is much lower than in previous years because you've made a surplus in the previous year, and as such, there isn't a need to break even or reduce the loss that you made in the previous year. The next slide is basically showing you what the historic increases are of the scheme over time compared to the restricted and open schemes, and also what is the proposed increase for 2019 that we are currently reviewing at the CMS. Our industry assumptions that we give guidance on to medical schemes for tariffs is 5.4% and utilization is 3.3%. So on average we're expecting schemes to have an 8 to 10% increase in contribution for 2019. That's I think a summary of the tariff, the contribution and the benefits that PAMED has for its members. This is my last slide. So the next set of slides would be presented by Alicia. It's this one called the relationship between the Parliamentary and Provincial Medical Schemes and the Medical Schemes Act.
Can I just request that we move a bit faster because we have the sitting at 2. Thank you. On the first slide of my section, it starts with comparison. So what we've done there is we've compared just the legal way of how schemes work to open schemes versus or restricted schemes versus an open scheme. So we will see there that I have ProfMed, ParMed, and Discovery. So ProfMed, it can also be GEMS or any restricted scheme. So the CMS then governs these medical schemes through the Medical Schemes Act. Then it's a scheme's choice to decide whether or not they want to be open or restricted. And the legal consequences of that will then follow. You will see that in the previous sitting we also mentioned that we have section 29(3)A, and that just says that there can be no discrimination against anyone who chooses to join a medical scheme except for a restricted scheme, and that will then depend on an eligibility criteria which the scheme will decide on. Then after you have the eligibility criteria, you go to the contract between the member and the scheme, and that is the registered rules of the scheme. The rules must be approved by the registrar, and it is binding. Now with ParMed, we have a very unique situation where this is the only medical scheme that has an act that provides for compulsory membership, so it's very unique in that sense. Then when we go to the next scheme, I've included the definition of a restricted medical scheme, and that is
one of those categories. It will be your employment or your former employment in a specific profession, trade or industry, or your employment or former employment by a particular employer, by employer indicated in a particular class of employers, and that is then section B where your permit finds itself. And then it can also be membership or full membership of a specific profession, professional association or union. Then on the next slide, just to reiterate, other restricted schemes do not make membership compulsory. So in those medical schemes, it will only be the rules that will determine that it's a restricted scheme and what criteria those members have to meet. Members who meet the eligibility criteria may still choose to join other open medical schemes. So for example, if you are a professional on ProfMed and you meet the eligibility criteria, you can choose to belong to ProfMed, or if you don't want to, you can go into Discovery as well. And that is the only thing that we have control over, is to make sure that they don't deny anyone access to medical schemes. And where members are forced to belong to a specific scheme, it is not done in terms of the Medical Schemes Act or the registered rules of the scheme. So it's outside of our jurisdiction. Employers use terms and conditions of employment which are similar to the provisions of the Parliament Act, and then it's much easier then to amend those rules in schemes if you want to widen up or narrow down the eligibility criteria. Okay, the Parliament Act, sorry, I skipped that slide. And I think all of us are familiar with that slide. It just says it shall, for as long as he or she holds an office or post or a member of Parliament, subject to the rules of the medical scheme, be a member of Parliament. Now, if you are thinking of changing that, the word shall will have to be changed in that, but we will deal with that in the following slide. We just said in the block just beneath the Parliament, we said CMS does not create, nor does it administer the Parliament Act. The Parliament Act governs an employment relationship, which is as long as he or she holds that office or post. Membership is based on office or post, that is your eligibility criteria. And in South Africa, employers sometimes force members to join a specific scheme in terms of an employment contract or for the member to qualify for a subsidy. So that is what we see. Then we've dealt with the next slide, and then if we go on to the slide that starts with registered rules of Parliament. I've included your rules there just to show you how it currently reads, and it defines employer as government, including provincial legislature and Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. And then beneath that you will see the eligibility criteria, which they say subject to the provisions of Rule 8, the membership of the scheme shall be compulsory. So those words will also need to be changed, shall be compulsory, but that can only be done after the act that forces you to belong to a medical scheme is repealed, but that is done through a plain rule amendment that the scheme can just submit to the council, and we can then effect that rule amendment. It then continues to go on who should be on the medical scheme. If you look at the next pages, in the interest of time I won't go through it, but that is just the membership basis of the scheme. Then if you turn to the next slide, in your current rule, there is a provision that says, provided that the board may, on good cause, show, grant exemption from membership to any person on receipt of a written application by such person setting out the reasons for such exemption. Compulsory membership is provided for in the Parliamentary and Provincial and Medical Aid Schemes Act as amended. Now, this rule should also be amended because currently it is illegal and invalid to have it in there. Why do you still have an act that forces members to belong to the Parliament scheme? Then on the new slide, we deal with co-application, and this is the same as the previous question that we had about a potential conflict between the two pieces of legislation. Now, the Parliament Medical Scheme falls within the jurisdiction of the Council for Medical Schemes, but there's no conflict. So at the bottom there, we summarized it and said that there's no conflict. The two pieces of legislation govern different issues. The Medical Schemes Act aims to regulate the medical schemes industry and to increase access to private health. The Parliament Act aims only to provide for compulsory membership of the Parliament Medical Scheme. Then on the next slide, we will deal with the options available, and we've just included the how a law is made. Parliament is a national legislature, law body making of South Africa, and one of its major functions is to pass new laws, to amend existing laws, and to repeal or abolish or cancel old laws. This function is guided by the Constitution, which governs and applies to all law and conduct within South Africa. Unfortunately, we couldn't provide a legal opinion on the constitutionality or how to amend this legislation because it does not fall within our area of expertise. and we also couldn't brief someone as an expert in that field, but we can give you some recommendations of good Cape Town-based advocates who are expert on this in this field. But as the regulator, we cannot do a legal opinion on behalf of an entity. But what we can suggest to you is that the two processes that you can follow, which we think will be the easiest, is to repeal the Permit Act entirely, which will then just be your normal process to have it repealed, which means that then the scheme rules would stand. And it still says it's compulsory, but then you can amend it. The second option then will be to amend the Permit Act if you don't want to repeal it, and that will make it then discretionary to belong to the scheme. So instead of stating that you shall be a member, it can state that you may be a member of Permit, which then means that the members who still wish to remain on Permit will be able to do so, and those who are not happy with the scheme will be able to move to another scheme, an open medical scheme, or even a restricted scheme like GEMS if you meet the eligibility criteria. Then the effect on continuation members, we've included a copy on the first slide, it's just a definition that this is actually governed by the Medical Schemes Act, and it deals with pensioners and a person who has to retire due to ill health, or they're not well, they can move to a new scheme with their dependents as well. So your specific rules is on the new slide, and they say a member who retains his membership of the scheme in terms of Rule 6.2, or a dependent who becomes a member of the scheme as a continuation member. And it says a member shall retain his membership of the scheme when he ceases to be a current member. If he's entitled to a pension, and on the next slide, if he has ceased to render active service or has retired as a judge, a member who is not entitled to a pension under the said act or under a pension ordinance, but within 30 days after having ceased to be a current member, applies for continued membership of the scheme. Then on the next slide, he continues to be a member of the pension scheme under the Members of Parliament and Political Office Bearers' Pension Schemes Act. A member shall retain his membership of the scheme with his registered dependents, if any, in the event that he's retiring from the service of his employer or his employment being terminated by his employer on account of age, ill health, or disability. The scheme shall notify every member who ceases to be a current member of his right to continued membership of the and of the contribution that is then payable. Then on the next slide, if members then choose to move, depending on the option that the scheme will take, all the members will move to, even the pensioners will be included in the move to a new scheme if everyone is, and they will not receive any underwriting, because we never want to see a situation where the risk is of pensioners is left by a scheme and the healthy members go off. So if the scheme will decide that it will be discretionary and some of you might want to go to a new scheme, we will have to look then if the scheme will be viable under those circumstances, and we will closely monitor that change going forward. Then on the next slide, we just entered and provided Chapter 2 of the Bill of Rights. If there is no concurrence between the members and someone to stay, someone to go, and an actual dispute arises, there might be an instance where you have to look at the constitutionality of the Permit Act, and that was one of the issues that you asked us to address. And like we said, we cannot give you a formal legal opinion, but we have had a look at some case law, and in the Bill of Rights there's a right to fair labour practices, and then I've quoted a free market article there that, because we know it's a common problem in the industry. In the case of labour laws, minimum wages, government mandated benefits and restrictions on working hours all take away the freedom of individuals to make employment decisions for themselves. And then we have the Consumer Protection Act in Section 31 that provides the consumer with the right to choose a supplier, so then the right to belong to a medical scheme of your choice. Then we just turn to the next page on Chapter 8, this was previously also in our document, to say that the decision will then be up to the Constitutional Court to decide whether or not the Permit Act is constitutionally valid or not. And on the next slide, I've quoted some of the paragraphs from a labour case where parties took the Department of Health to the Labour Court. They were unhappy with the way that they were treated as part of the fair labour practice. And then just to quote there, Section 172 of the Constitution deals with the powers of courts in constitutional matters. When deciding a constitutional matter within its power, the court must declare that any law or conduct that is inconsistent with the Act is invalid and inconsistent, and it may make an order that is just and equitable. Then also just to summarize, in the interest of time, it says that you can then, in the meanwhile, while this is pending, get an interdict from a court so that they can interdict that specific piece of legislation while you go through the process. I've also included the full section 172 on the next page, just for interest. And on paragraph D, any person or organ of state with sufficient interest may appeal or apply directly to the Constitutional Court to confirm or vary an order of constitutional invalidity by a court in terms of this subsection. And on the last slide, just section 172 of the Constitution must be read with section 1572 of the Labour Relations Act, in terms of which the Labour Court has jurisdiction to decide constitutional issues. So what you can do is lodge a dispute in the Labour Court to declare that piece of legislation as invalid if you want to invalidate it. But I still think that the easiest way to do it will be to repeal it or just to amend the one simple word shall to may. So that was our best way of looking at the option. I think that we can now have a discussion and deal with your particular questions that you might have.
Thank you very much for that presentation, and sorry that we had to rush you, but it's because of the usually Wednesdays, 6:30, but today, as you know, it's a special one. Can I open to members for questions and comments?
Yes, am I correct to say that the second presentation takes us through the technical process, what needs to be done, but it doesn't express the opinion, is that necessarily the right option to take, or what the implications for the fund would be if shall is changed to may?
Okay, do you mind if noting the questions and then I take all one of us, same? Or Dr. Kilbewire? And then. It's you, Dr.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation, and especially where you highlighted, you know, the higher, where you are definitely showed us and accepted the fact that there's higher contributions towards the medical scheme, and obviously the anticipated increment going towards 2019 and then after, and we note with things the different options that we can take, especially even though you said you cannot provide us with how the things can be run, but I think you will be able to apply what would be a workable route from our side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm sorry I was late, but other meetings that held us up. No, thank you for the presentation. I think it gives us a better idea of how we can hone in eventually when the committee sits on what needs to be done. I mean, the options are there, clear. Repeal the Act, say goodbye to it. Secondly, change shall to make it discretionary. And I think in that case, it will be up to Parliament if we make it discretionary to conduct an exercise from those who are current members to say if we make it discretionary, how many of you would still remain on Parliament? And then they must do a viability exercise. So then you give everybody their own rights. You may find that out of the 2,300, 2,000 of us may say, listen, we want to remain with you. Don't give us a proposal. And that will end the story. So you make it discretionary and let the discussion be with us. But then you're not flouting constitution, you're not doing anything else. So I think Parliament has some work to do. But Parliament cannot sit back and just say, well, we are not going to be viable if all of you are not on it. We have to put the onus on them as well. And they have to take that responsibility of giving us some figures. And we are not here to bat for Parliament. Unfortunately, they're going to do their own batting. But it's good for them to do some exercises and share it with us.
Thank you very much. Let's also appreciate the presentation. It gives us, more information so that when we take those final decisions, we'll be properly armed Mine is not necessarily a question, Chair. It's just a comment that what the presentation says to do, which is the second presentation, by the way, because we did meet them earlier on, it confirms what we had already realized, that the magic is in the numbers. So if you look at Bonitas and you look at GEMS, there are then around 300 and something thousand members. That is why they are able to have options and all those other things. So fortunately for us, we've also been meeting potential members and so on. But I think for purposes of this meeting, we may not be able to discuss much with the CMS. I think on our own we'll be able to use this information together with the other information that we have to make, you know, a very fundamental analysis as to what exactly needs to be done. But finally, in terms of the law, in terms of your own regulations, your presentation indicates here that the compulsory nature of the permit scheme was not done in terms of your own rules and regulations. Legally speaking, what does that mean for the CMS, you know, and for the industry? That would be my small question. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Kaula? Okay. Question?
Just the slide where you talk of benefits changes for 2018-2019. You know, if you talk of the choice for medical practitioners, you have one so that you can be easily referred to a specialist. I think that clause in your slide gives me an impression that in order for us to be saying we are happy with PAMET, blah, 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 I have a feeling that the benefits for members are being dreamed, dreaming them. Let me give a classical example. GEMS as a policy or whatever rule that says you can only use this particular doctor, not that one. What if I'm in Durban visiting Honorable Kaula and I get sick or my daughter gets sick or my son when I'm in KZN, I'm far away from the practitioner that I normally use in the Eastern Cape, you can't call that a benefit. Now, what you are saying, it gives me an impression that we are moving to that direction. If we say members know, they will have to be referred by a particular practitioner. For instance, a living example is, I use two doctors. I don't use one doctor. What do I do in that situation? And I understand you are from the council, you are not from PAMET. But then if you say pediatrician, maternity, and all others will need referral, you get referral from your practitioner and others are not. Please explain that to me. Yeah, I have a serious concern. I have a serious concern that instead of being better, you are restricting and trimming it down. And you can't compare us with GEMS. GEMS is a terrible medical aid. I say that out of experience. Because we took our kids out of panic because of this unaffordability. I took my two daughters and left with son. My wife is in PAMET, not PAMET, what is it? GEMS. Nobody can convince me about GEMS. Even the minister himself will never convince me about GEMS. Thanks. Oh, the other issue. I didn't understand this slide. Where you talk of plus, minus, saving requirements, plus, minus, utilization, maybe you captured that, but that part I didn't understand. Maybe I want to obtain a clarity on that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And just on that particular slide, that very slide, I wanted to find out if it has to do with the increase on members' salary vis-a-vis the increase by permit on the tariffs, on the contribution. And on the contribution increase that for 2019, permit proposed an increase for 9.7%. In the presentation we had last week, we then made to realize that I'm sure we received a 10% increase once, those of us who were here since 1994, and most of the increase has been 4% or, if any, between 4 and 5%, which doesn't match the permit increase. And then also I wanted to find out on the second, I agree with Honorable Singh that the permit has got to do their own work. So if permit is not governed by the rules of that governs the medical aid, it means it can disregard. So how to still, because if it is governed by an act of parliament, so and the rules of CMS do not apply to permit, then how do you ensure compliance with the permit? Because CMS did not create, nor it does not administer the Permit Act. Maybe just the clarity around the. Then on the co-application, where if any conflict relating to the matter dealt with this act, in this act, arises between this act and the provision of any other law, save the Constitution or any act expressly amending this act, the provision of this act shall prevail. So is Constitution not the supreme law of the country, and that any law that is in conflict with the Constitution is unconstitutional? Yeah, and that's the medical aid scheme and permit act are different pieces of legislation. And, you know, the more I listen about the inputs and the submissions, the more you get more confused about this thing. On the options, say for instance we get all the traditional leaders, we get all the local government, we get all the magistrates to join permit, and they've made their presentation and their reservation on their affordability, but they are willing. So say they agree to come, will it make a difference? What difference will it make to the contribution by members? And I think lastly, it is. Mm-hmm. I think I've already asked the question, the including the Bill of Rights. And I think the problem also with members is you get a question on there that are members employers or employees, of which we argue to the issue and we refuse to pay UIF because we are not employed, and that, you know. So I think we are trapped in between the two, and agree with the proposal to amend the Permit Act. But so yeah, I think yeah, those are the questions. Maybe if you could
amendment versus repealing. Remember, we once had discussions about the implications if we repeal. Maybe they can better clarify us if we repeal that piece of act, that piece of legislation, the implications thereof. We are clear in terms of amendments that we can make, but then the repealing part of it, if we decide this committee that we repeal, what are the implications? We repeal and then what are you left with? You are still a member of that medical aid, or you collapse the whole thing?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I will deal with the legal questions and then I will give over to Paresh just to answer the rest of the questions. I think question 1 and 7 was very similar, and that will be the consequences of the amendment or repeal and what will be the best decision for the scheme. So the three options that we've given will be your repeal, your amendment to change it to May, or then the constitutional challenge. All of them will have the same consequences, it's just three different ways to get to that solution. So if you don't have that piece of legislation that says you shall belong to PARMED, it means that it will immediately default to the scheme rules, which will then govern that relationship. So that will fall squarely within the responsibility of the Board of Trustees of PARMED and the rules. So if the rules say that you may belong to this scheme, if you meet the following criteria, you'll have to abide by that, but also it will mean that automatically when that act falls away, you have a choice, because it is only the operation of that act that forces members to belong to PARMED. So it will be then normal, like any other open or restricted medical scheme, where you can choose to belong to it or you can leave, but the scheme rules will still apply. And the consequences will depend on how the scheme or the members deal with it, because we can't preempt and say that most of the members will leave. We will really have to see what happens in practice. And then also, you don't have employment contracts, so it just says office bearers. Then the second question was, where the CMS said it's not administered by the CMS, how does it affect the CMS and the industry? So it was the Office of the President that issued the PARMED Act. It doesn't have any influence on the CMS or the medical schemes industry, because it's only applicable on office bearers of Parliament in that capacity. So it's in that labour relations sphere, if we use that terminology. So it won't have an impact. We were not responsible for it. It doesn't fall within our jurisdiction at all. So it was just created for the sole purpose of forcing members of Parliament to belong to that medical scheme. It's also a very, very short act, and it just says that it's compulsory, and it also says that it's subject to the rules of PARMED. So the rules of PARMED still applies. And that also speaks to question 4 then, that says if that act is in place, PARMED is then not governed by the rules, and the CMS rules that do not apply. The rules still apply, and they make specific reference to that in the act. So while that act just speaks to eligibility and membership, the rules of the scheme govern the day-to-day business of the scheme, of your benefits. So it governs something totally different of how you submit your claims. And the same with the Medical Schemes Act. It deals with how to act in the best interest of members. So it's two very different areas. Then there was an issue on the conflict, and the Constitution being the highest law of the country, so there's no apparent or very clear conflict with the Constitution. unless there is an argument made out, and that will have to be done in a court where you can say that it is not a fair labour practice or it limits our freedom of choice. But that is to be determined by the court. We can't say as the CMS that there is a conflict with it. But even if there were a conflict, there's still nothing in this Medical Schemes Act that won't apply. It applies as it stands. And then the implications of a repeal, and that was our suggestion, that it might be the easiest way just to repeal it. And that will mean that members can then choose. Do we still want to belong to ParMed, or no, we don't want to, so we can then choose to belong to any other medical scheme of our choice. Okay, I'll give over to Paresh to supplement and to deal with the contribution question.
Okay, thank you, Alicia. Honourable members, I think it's important to note that whether you repeal or change the Act, if a member then chooses to join another medical scheme, that member may face underwriting or waiting periods. So even though you may have the option now to change, our Medical Schemes Act that the CMS administers will still have to apply to you moving and having to maybe be subjected to waiting periods for certain conditions that you have. And because of that, we usually find that when schemes decide to open, or restricted schemes decide to give members a choice, the people that have the easiest way to move would move, and usually that is usually the youngest people, because those open medical schemes would not apply any waiting periods. And what happens is then the ones that find it more difficult to move would stay. So the survey that you mentioned would be very good, but it may indicate when they actually have to do that, they might find it difficult to move. What happens is then the people that stay behind are maybe older, so your scheme may get older, which may result in your contributions going even higher. So I think the solution is not just giving you choice, but if you give that choice, it may have that implication, which may want you to rethink, should we even keep ParMed, because we're not getting the benefit of younger people subsidizing us. I think the point made by the chair about the magistrates and municipal managers and people that you would probably look at wanting to join would also depend on their profile. Are they also older than a certain age? Maybe they will be the same profile as you are now. It may not necessarily reduce the cost. You get bigger, but you would probably still be find that it won't be cheaper. So if you look at the options of the game, like Bonita, there's 300,000 members where the benefits are subsidized, so it by the younger people. So that makes it cheaper. So I think that's something that you have to think about. If that's the case, you may want to think about merging or amalgamating the scheme, because then your members would be able to move without any underwriting to any scheme that you choose to move to. So I think that's another option that you need to consider, and it might be easier for you to do that. The choice of the scheme and which option will then depend on the members and the scheme itself. So the scheme may have to do that exercise to say which options are there, which schemes are willing to take us, on what terms, and would our members be happy to vote on which option they'd like to do, and go ahead with that. This is all depends on, and is based on, the fact that members are finding it unaffordable. The contributions are not going to be going down, they're going to be going up faster than your salaries. And I mean, that leads to the point about salary increase. Your increase is based on what the scheme is going through, and that's that slide where the member spoke about the box that is confusing: contribution plus minus plus minus. So your contribution increase is based on the actual experience of the scheme, not the salaries that the members earn. So if costs of providing healthcare goes up higher than your salary, your contribution is going to go up by more than that. A good example is if at a certain age you went to a doctor once in a year, as you get older you find you go more than once. It's not just the consultation is double. So every year as that happens, it increases the cost. And if your scheme gets older, it's going to get higher. that's the easiest relationship we can work with. Age is, has a direct bearing on the cost. So I think there's no way in which we can curb the increase to keep it in line with salaries, because the scheme would then run maybe losses, which I mentioned, and you may lose your reserves, or it may reduce the reserves, and to build that up may need higher increases in future years. So I think the choice about the option is easy to repeal, but what happens then with the scheme? So it's important to note that that's, it has to be, once the decision is made, it has to say what would you do next, what's the next step for the scheme. And all the members need to then vote on that process going forward, if it was, if it's going to be amalgamation. There's even an option of liquidation, but we don't advise that, because we lose that, that money is best used if you use it in to get into another scheme. So you can do that. I think the other the point that we you made about the benefits on the family practitioner nomination. So when we get asked by schemes to allow them to do that, we make it compulsory that they have out-of-area benefits, because we know that you don't only have one GP or one doctor, because you have one where you live and one where you work. That's mostly when you say you have two, that's mostly the case. And your family doctor may not, or your doctor may not be your family's doctor. So there has to be a different nominated provider for them with out-of-hospital, out-of-area visits, so they must be included in the benefits. So you won't be in a situation where the scheme would force you to use your practitioner when you're not in the area. So we, as a CMS, is actually our responsibility to make sure that there is a benefit still can be applied and is fair to the members, so that they don't have less. There's no feeling that you're actually getting less from the scheme. That may be a result of the way in which they communicate this to you, and I think maybe the scheme would be able to answer that question if you ask them again in that specific detail. But our view is there has to be out-of-area visits. In terms of the list that I mentioned there, those are ones where you don't need referral. So actually, these are sort of the day-to-day things where members know who their gynecologist is. They go for their usual test or pap smear. You don't need to go for a GP visit with a referral to go there. So it's designed so that you can... It's a house, okay. Yeah, so it's meant to make it easier, so you don't need referral for these. This is already guaranteed that you get. There's no change in the benefit. So I think that's what they try to communicate. I think they may have missed that point. There was a question about the contributions, and I tried to cover it. I don't know if I managed to cover it in enough detail for you to understand. But I think the relationship with salary, I did explain that the scheme has to do that on its own. Okay.
Thank you very much. Barbara, Dr. Lewis.
Thank you, James. Good afternoon, members. Apologies if I'm whispering. This is as much voice as I have at the moment. Chairperson, members, I listened to the presentation. I would just like to caution, especially as the rules now, as reference makes it express, use of employees with relation to legislatures. Parliament has been part of court cases where the court has expressly said that members aren't employees. So it is incorrect, or you can say it's akin to a labour relations situation, but you cannot look at it from a labour relations perspective, because members as well as judges, if there's a public interest aspect, it's the office that you serve, not a person. Otherwise members would be reporting to, would have employment contracts with the Secretary of Department, which is not the case, will be able to go to the CCMA. So just a caution, that is, as reference, if that is in the Parliament rules, I would advise members to mention that in the report to the House, that that is something that will have to be aligned if the option is an amendment. Also just, with the options mentioned, yes, there is an option of appeal, yes, there is an option of changing it to May. Must also just caution from a legislative perspective as to impact It's not going to be as easy as just saying delete shall and may. There will have to be certain transitional provisions put in place, because if it's repealed without transitional provisions, and as was stated, the rules then the admin and members of parliament can just choose. There's the option that parliament may collapse if it's a mass exodus, which will then negatively impact on the rights of the people who stay in parliament. So transitional provisions will always have to be there to cushion whatever decision is made, even if it is a repeal. The same with liquidation, because parliament is a creature of its own, it's legislatively created. It's not as easy as just the normal company route of liquidation. That will have to be done through legislation. So those aspects just underlie the options of repeal or amendment. And then to answer Chairperson's question as to the conflict of legislation, the two clash, I would just like to point out today that when it comes to legislative interpretation, you get general legislation, specific legislation, and the interpretation rule or the rule of thumb is usually the general the specific legislation trumps general. So Parliament in theory should by its own recognize its own, and if there is some sort of issue that's Parliament related, that you should look at Parliament. But the issue here is that Parliament is pre-1994 and perhaps does not give expression to the will of the legislature anymore. So that's where that then falls. It's not necessarily an issue of general specific between medical scheme and Parliament at the moment, but whether there's still the will of the legislature being expressed by a pre-1994 piece of legislation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks. Members are beginning to leave. Let's appreciate your time you gave to us to come and present or make this presentation. We really appreciate that. I believe you will be kept informed about the processes and the progress with regard to this. I think we are at the tail end of the process with regard to this. And we thank you for that. And members for availing themselves. We shall engage in the transitional provisions towards the end of this. I think, thank you, Coach. The meeting is dismissed, or before I dismiss the meeting, in terms of our agenda, we're supposed to be engaging on the item 5. We want to propose that item 5, we defer it to the next session, but it must come in a form of a crafted report that captures all presentations with recommendations. And that crafted report will be informing what should be the way forward in terms of the report that we shall submit for adoption by the House. Now, if I still remember, it means in practical terms, we are left with 2 meetings where we're going to convene the subcommittee to deliberate on the recommendations emerging from the report. From there, we convene the border committee to say, this is the work that you mandated us to do. This is the report that you must adopt, deliberate on it, discuss it, dissect the report, shoot it down, throw it out of the window. It will be up to. Thank you very much, members, and our